for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's a great pleasure to welcome you to the 200th episode of my Wayne's Comics podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is a bat-tacular as I present my interviews from this year's New York Comic Con. And I want to right off the bat be able to thank Charlotte Sandler from BH Impact and the other good folks from DC Publicity who really helped make all these things happen. It was great stuff. Interviews are going to be brief, usually no more than 10 minutes. It'll start out with Gotham Academy's Brendan Fletcher and Carl Kershaw, then Jimmy Palmiotti from Harley Quinn, the Batgirl team featuring Babs Tarr and Brendan Fletcher, We Are Robin with Kari Randolph, and everything will wrap up with the Batman team, Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. There's a lot to get to, especially this week, so let's get on with the show. Talking today with
Brendan Fletcher
and
Carl Kershaw
about Gotham Academy, which is a big hit at Major Spoilers, the website that I'm at. I just want to let you know. Where did the concept of Gotham Academy come from? Where did you guys come up with that?
Carl and I had nothing to do with that.
Okay. Well, where did it come from?
A little bit to do with it.
No, yeah, I'm kidding, of course. But it did get its start with Batgroup editor Mark Doyle and our collaborator Becky Cloonan. Mark had called, he'd just taken over the Bat office and was reaching out to creators he'd worked with in the past, and Becky was one of his first calls. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. Mark called Becky and said he wanted to do some new, different things with the Batman universe, and Becky's first instinct was to do something all ages with a bunch of kids, and we all realized that no one had really been telling stories about how non-superheroes in Gotham, especially young people, viewed the city and the place they lived in and the legend of the Batman. So we put them in a boarding school. Becky asked me to draw it. She brought Brendan on as a co-writer, and that was it. And Mark said yes.
It's really great that you're expanding the Gotham universe, because I've always thought there were areas in Gotham we'd never actually seen before. Did you guys have to coordinate with the other Bat books as far as like creating new characters and the people in the books?
No, it's funny, you know, like the kind of things that we wanted to do from the outset were very kind of self-contained. We did want to reach out and pull some villains or some popular supporting characters from the Bat mythos, and that was a case of needing to find out who was available. Because this book is in continuity, you know, which of these villains has been outed as being a villain by Batman? And we found out that certain classic characters like Professor Milo, Batman didn't yet know that he was up to villainous deeds, so he was a perfect candidate to be the science teacher. It's just little things like that. And we only got shut down once, and that was when we asked for Solomon Grundy as the groundskeeper. And we were told that he was on Earth 2, and he could not be our groundskeeper, so
I'm sure the Earth 2 Gotham Academy kids are dealing with him, though.
Yeah.
Well, I really like the art in the book, too. It's got a really nice style as far as like reaching out to younger readers and things like that. Did you do that on purpose? Was that the style you wanted to approach with it? How did you decide on how you're going to handle the art?
Thank you. Yeah, it was very deliberate in that I work in a number of different styles depending on the book I'm working on. In this case, I wanted to do something that really harkened back to Batman the Animated Series, which was, I think, the Batman that we, not that we grew up loving, but like probably the tidiest, most iconic vision of it in the representation of it in recent memory.
It encapsulated all the different. Batman is such an elastic concept and has proven over the years in different mediums. And that show took it all and fused it together perfectly. And I think it really spoke to us. We were, how old were we then? Like 20?
Yeah.
18, 20 or something when we saw that?
Yeah, something like that.
And it just took the various versions, like the Adam West version, the Neil Adams version, the Frank Miller version, the Michael Keaton, Tim Burton film, mashed it all up. And
in a way that felt perfect and also uncluttered. It incorporates everything but feels very tidy and feels like you can do anything with it. So what I wanted to do was take that vibe and put it on a page that skews it a little more towards a superhero look, because, well, I mean, DC has published animated series books in the exact style of the animated series, and they feel like they're very young readers, and I wanted to kind of skew somewhere in the middle there.
It really looks good. I really like the way that looks. It's tremendous.
It's partly due to the color setup that Carl demanded for the book.
That's a huge part of it. The reason pioneered that
years ago, really.
Animation pioneered it. What we're doing is basically trying to achieve an animated look on a page by having the backgrounds painted and having the characters colored in a flat color. So it looks like cell animation over, like traditional 2D cell animation over top of painted backgrounds, which is what you'd get in an animated show, but is rarely done in comics because it's super time sensitive and a lot of hard work, which is why we've got some amazing colorists on board. We've got Serge Lapointe coloring characters and Michelle Asarasakorn, who's painting every background on every page. So I don't think there's a workflow quite like ours in the industry.
Or a result. I don't work on the art, so I can say from an outsider's perspective with a little inside peek that it's really one of the most unique looking books on the stand. I'm very proud to be working with these guys.
Well, it really looks great. I really love the look of it. It's just fantastic.
Olive is the main character.
What's her... to get her background and starting to understand her a little better. Is she based on somebody? Is she like an original character that you came up with? How did Olive come to be?
Olive is definitely an original character. The concept of Gotham Academy as we kind of came upon it was more about the buildings themselves at first, and then what they were about, and then we knew the type of character that we needed to tell the story of the history of these buildings. It's weird because it doesn't feel like it's a story about architecture or politics or history, but Olive's tale touches back on all of those things.
But when it was created, the character was basically constructed around the idea that we needed a vessel through which to talk about the history of Gotham. And you see bits of that peppered throughout the book, like on chalkboards. I mean, it's there. It's all in there. People are talking about it. We're doing things architecturally that are very deliberate, and all that stuff will slowly unfold.
Her look, white hair and things that she has. How did that come?
Well, partly because I know what her backstory is. I wanted to give her a look that was kind of not super heroic, but iconic enough that she would stand out as the main character. Her eyes are red just because I wanted, because I knew, now that you've read the book, that there's something going on with fire. So I wanted to sort of telegraph that early on without actually saying anything. And that's about it. Other than that, it was just trying to sincerely portray a young girl going to school, as with all those characters, you know?
And it wouldn't be much of a Batman book if Batman himself didn't show up occasionally. How's that going to go? Are you going to use him kind of sparingly? Is he going to show up when something warrants him showing up?
It's funny, we were just talking about this, but the book is in continuity, and right now Bruce Wayne is not Batman. So it's Jim, this is not a big spoiler, I guess, but Jim Gordon is previously Commissioner James Gordon, is now Batman wearing a robot suit. That robot suit doesn't really fit the aesthetic of Gotham Academy. We opted to kind of keep him out for the time. So you'll notice like we have a hint of Bruce Wayne at the beginning of the second arc. Bruce Wayne is still around Gotham, so we can put him in there. But I think keeping Batman out for this arc, Batman in the current incarnation, will allow the collected edition of Gotham Academy to feel a little more timeless. So if Bruce Wayne ever becomes Batman again, I think you'll certainly see him make another appearance.
The interesting thing, too, is that when we were constructing the story of Gotham Academy before anything was ever drawn or designed, we thought, as I think anyone would, that if you're going to do a Batman-related book, people are going to want to see Batman in it and have some kind of Batman content. And so we put the Batman appearance in there as, you know, I think we just felt duty-bound to do that. And what's interesting to me is that reader feedback suggests that people would rather see less of that. I mean, it's established that he's there, which is all you really need, and now it's just about the kids. And it's a testament, I think, to those new characters that they can carry that book without Batman, and people would rather see stories about them.
Wow, that's something. In a Batman book, and Batman's not the most important part. How about that?
It's shocking to me, actually.
Now, of course, the other one...
Well, all we can say is that December's issue of Gotham Academy, issue 13, is a Robin War tie-in, and Damian is a Robin.
There's a lot of Robins.
There's a lot. Oh, you never know who's going to turn up.
Maps is Robin, right?
Oh, Maps is... Well, I don't know. Is Maps a Robin?
Maps would definitely like to be Robin. Absolutely.
Forthcoming issues, any things that you'd like the fans to know about?
Well, we've got... I don't know when you're posting this, but coming up in the next few weeks, we're going to give you a real tease here. We've got a great cover by Helen Chen coming up in issue 14, and she is the illustrator who did the Damian issue 7. She's doing a cover for issue 14, and it's going to be a crazy issue. It's going to be the start of something all new that you're going to see for the first few months of next year. You're going to see some more focus put on the supporting characters of Gotham Academy. We're going to step away from Olive's story after we hit the crescendo of the next arc. And you're going to see some new voices come in to play with these characters.
Well, you guys are doing a wonderful job, so keep it up. The Gotham Academy is a terrific book. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm talking right now with Jimmy Palmiotti, the creator of one of DC's best-selling comics, Harley Quinn. What's it feel like to have one of the top 10 books going out every month?
It feels fantastic, I got to tell you. I would say it's Bruce Timm and, you know, those guys created it, but I'm tired. This convention's knocking me out. How about you? Yeah. No, Paul Dini and Bruce Timm created it, but Mander and I kind of took what they did and threw our own little ingredients into the pot. And yeah, it feels great. I mean, I've always had a career that's kind of like I'm doing always oddball characters, so it's kind of nice that this one hit for a while. It's a refreshing thing not to have to go out there and wave the flag all the time and get right into the writing part of it. So it's nice.
When I go through this convention, I see lots and lots of Harley Quinns around. So obviously the book is having some influence. And of course, the animated series did too.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think it's one of the few characters that, because the colors are identifiable, cosplayers and fans can like change it up. And it's not many characters like that because, you know, you can't really do that to Superman and Batman too much. But with Harley, everybody can make their own Harley-type character. And I think that's a lot of charm in the character. I also think it's it shows that this character is going to be around for a while. It's not just one that's going to be come and go. I think this character has a long life because if it actually hits that many people in a certain way, I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon, and that's great.
Well, one of the things I really like is there's a female lead in a comic. How great is that?
It's funny because Amanda and I were laughing because we have the little black book we're doing in December, and it's Wonder Woman and Harley. And Amanda and I were writing it, and we're like, who's going to draw it? And Amanda's like, by the time we're done, Amanda's like, no one else is going to draw this. I'm drawing this. There's no way I'm not going to draw this. You know, it has Wonder Woman, it has Harley. And I'm like, yeah, the two biggest characters in the DCU in one book. I said, that's going to be fun to see. And it is. It's a crazy book.
Well, you also had her team up with Power Girl for a while, and that's kind of pretty big. What was it like to write Power Girl?
Well, you know, we did the original series a couple of years ago, and we loved the character, and we thought there's got to be some way we can get Power Girl into the Harley book, and we gave her amnesia, and Harley convinced her they're a superhero team. So it's completely ridiculous, but it's completely fun, and they play off each other. You know, Power Girl's like the straight man, and Harley's like running around like a nut around her. And they're just a great combo, and it worked really well in the three issues of the book. And then Dan and the guys at DC said, would you want to do a miniseries? And we jumped at it. And we brought in Justin Gray with it because Justin wrote the original Power Girl series, so we can get the tone right. And we've been having a great time. I mean, it's only six issues, but honestly, if it was an ongoing series, it would be the funnest thing to do.
Well, she's got now, how many books now are you going to have? You're going to have two ongoings, right? Is that what's going to happen?
Well, no. So Power Girl and Harley end next month, right? And then Little Black Book is bi-monthly, so it's every other month. So we have the regular Harley book that's monthly, and then every other month, you can call it a special, or you can call it the Little Black Book, but it's its own. I think you'll like this. It's like it's no middle, a beginning, middle, and end. It ends. They're done in once.
Oh, boy.
So retailers can keep them on the shelves for a long time because people say, oh, I want a Harley and Wonder Woman here, or I want Harley and Green Lantern. There's that. So these books will hopefully have a lot of life. And I'm always thinking about retailers because my friends are retailers. And I always think this is the perfect book for it. It's 38 pages, done in one. Somebody walks in the store, doesn't know the character. They can hand the book and say, here, give this a shot. You like Wonder Woman? You like Green Lantern? You like Superman? Here's Harley with them, and that's the angle on the book.
I was interested, too, as I was coming in, they have this DC superhero girls, like, academy kind of thing, and Harley's in there even, and of course, they have Poison Ivy as well, too.
Yeah.
So do you guys consult on that at all, or is that separate from you?
No, we write the book for a little older. I don't know if you'd want me writing a book around for 8-year-olds or 10-year-olds, or, I mean, I could do it, don't get me wrong, but I think we have enough work right now. I'm happy they have that because I think if it's sort of like a great entry level for a young girl or boy to watch those characters. You know, we want to hook them young. We're selling product. We want to get them hooked.
Well, every episode of that's basically going to be a commercial for the comic if she's in there.
In a way, I'm hoping they stand alone and do their own thing. But, Yeah, absolutely. Because I think anyone in comics understands that you read what you read when you grow up, and then your tastes change and you read some other stuff. And the idea that Harley and these other characters are going to be growing, as you grow up, there'll be a level that you can always grab onto, I think is a really smart plan.
As far as the character goes, is she going to grow? How is she going to change as a character as you write her over time?
Harley, well, you know, from issue one, I mean, we took her out of her comfortable surroundings of Gotham. We got her away from the Joker. We created her own supporting cast. In the latest 6 months, she's got the gang of Harleys, which she's got a group of people. It's kind of maddening and fun. And so she's constantly growing. In her mind, she's the hero. Obviously, what she does all the time, not heroic sometimes. Sometimes it is. But she's a character that has good intentions and bad results. And so there is always growth with the character because she interacts with her supporting characters. There is that classic, I like to say the classic, Peter Parker, Mary Jane kind of stuff going on. The soap opera part of comics is there. The action is always there too. But we fall in love with the characters. So the characters stay interesting. They're all going to grow eventually. Yeah.
Great. Well, that's good.
This is ongoing. Do you envision this ending anytime soon? Because, man, books in the top 10 usually hang around a long time.
We've been doing it over 2 years now, and it's kind of shocking that it's like the number 3 book half the time. And believe me, nobody's more surprised than Amanda and I about that. I mean, we're with a great team. We have Chad Harden. We have Alex Sinclair. We have these talented people on it that honestly make us look good every month. And I get it. You open that book, and it's beautiful. This is a book that's not switching teams all the time. There's a consistency. And again, I'm going back to my retailer friends. There's a consistency to the product. They can put it out every month. People know what they're going to get. It's the same team. And I think it's really important now to have that. I think with all the books jumping around and restarting and rebooting, I think it's great to have a steady team and a book that you can still jump on, even in issue 20 or 25. You're not going to get lost on our book. We always go out of our way to make sure you can kind of grab into it. So hopefully we have a long life. You know, the movie comes out. Hopefully that does well and people get turned on to it. But right now we got some really diehard fans. And I think as long as we don't think about it too hard and just keep doing what we're doing, I think we're going to keep them for a while.
Well, I see your name and Amanda's name and Justin's on a book, I buy it. Yeah, and now I'm going to get good stuff. Can I ask you about real quickly about one book from another company? You're doing something for Jet City Comics that I said. Yeah.
Forager, the book? Yeah. Sure. Forager was a Kickstarter I did. And it's basically about our humans' first contact with aliens from outer space through a young girl. A small girl makes the first contact. And then we follow the story as she's older and is actually going out of our universe, leaves our universe to meet them. And we wrote it. It was an all-ages story we wrote. We did it as a Kickstarter. It was a successful Kickstarter. Everybody got the books. And then Jet City asked if they could publish it. And we worked with them. We did the Wool Out adaptation, the Hugh Howery book, for them. And they were great partners. And so we gave it to them. And, yeah, they put it out. I just signed a bunch of them upstairs for them. It's just a cool thing we got to do. And again, it's its own book. It's a done-in-one book. So it's a graphic novel. But it was something that we did. We had a personal story we wanted to tell. It was more Justin, I got to say, because he has a daughter. And a lot of it's based on Justin's life. And I think it's a fun book for everybody to read.
You know, I love those books you were doing from the other books like Uncle Sam and all those.
Yeah, Freedom Fighters. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a continue.
Yeah, you know, like I said, I think my career at DC has always been fringe characters in a way. You know, obviously Jonah Hex and the G.I. Zombie. And I love fringe characters because I feel like I can get away with telling the story I want to tell because they're not so worried about it being in the spotlight, you know. And I honestly thought when we took on Harley, that was a fringe character. We really didn't know it was going to blow up. I don't think anybody knew it was going to blow up like that. And we treated her like a fringe character, meaning give her more story, more character, go in there and be crazy and try to get away with everything. And, you know, now it became mainstream and we have to still do it. So it's great problems. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, keep it up, Jeremy. You're doing great stuff.
Thank you so much, buddy. Great to see you.
Good to see you. Talking right now with Team Batgirl, at least two members of it. That includes ladies first, of course, Babs Tarr. How are you doing, Babs?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. And Brendan Fletcher, how are you?
Great. Caffeinated.
Okay. Off to a good start. You know, I have to give you guys a lot of credit because Batgirl continues just to perk along right nicely and is doing such a great job. But why do you think that it is? What is it about Batgirl, the way that you're doing it, that's made it catch on with the fans?
It's all Babstar's art. Cameron and I take absolutely no credit. We just try to get out of the way and let Babs draw amazing scenes of flirting and action and fun.
I feel like our team, we're all friends and we all are really passionate about the story and we love what we do, and it's just, it makes our jobs really easy to make these really fun stories for you guys. So thank you for the support and keep reading.
You know, I bought the statue and I have it home. I really enjoy the look of it. And yeah, isn't that great? Oh, there's a brand new one that's coming out and it looks really good, of course, based on Babs' art, and can't wait to get that too, because the other one was black and white, so this is color.
Yeah, it's like a foot tall. The other one's pretty short.
Yeah, so when's this coming out, do you know?
I think in November?
It's either the end of October or the beginning of November, I think.
Yeah.
Well, now I noticed that you guys have some members of the Bat family coming to visit Babs in the near future. Do you want to talk a little bit about those? I know that Spoiler is coming as one of them.
Well, issue 46, we see that Stephanie Brown comes to Burnside. If you've been following all the Bat books, you know that she's been appearing recently in the Catwoman series, written by our buddy Genevieve Valentine. So Spoiler's been receiving some training under Eiko Hashigawa, and maybe she's ready to hit the streets. Maybe she's ready for an adventure with Barbara Gordon. But you never know. We're just going to have to wait until November to find out.
Great. Looking forward to that. And also, you've got somebody who's going to show up and talk about their relationship, somebody with Batgirl. And we can all probably have an idea who that is. How's that issue going to go? What's going to happen? What kind of teaser can you give us?
Well, he comes at a real inopportune time. So it doesn't really set up for the best results, I'll just say that.
That character may make some poor choices in their timing, and maybe things would turn out a different way if timing was a bit different. But, you know, it's going to be a really fun ride. There's going to be a lot of surprises and a lot of heartstrings maybe pulled.
Yes. I'm so excited. I feel like it's one of my strongest issues. I've been learning this whole time, and I'm really proud of this one. I hope everyone gets a chance to pick it up and check it out.
Yeah, that's issue 45, coming out in just a few weeks, end of October.
October 28th.
October 28th.
And I understand there's an issue in which she sort of questions her ability to think and loses her mind, is the way it's put in the promotional stuff. What can we know about that at this point?
Well, that's... It may be a bit sensationalist in the promo, but certainly some things happen over the next couple of issues that are going to lead Barbara to start to question decisions that she's made and things that have gone on in the past. Maybe some things that have happened aren't exactly the kind of things that she thinks has happened. Grammar wasn't exactly great there, so I apologize. It's really early in the morning, and I'm still working my way through my first cup of coffee.
And you guys have a 50th issue coming up. Do you guys have something special in mind for that?
We do.
I was going to lie and say, she's just going to be Babs sitting around in her sweats at home.
We'll set the expectations real low.
It's going to be a clip show, like a Seinfeld clip show. Just pages from past issues.
Yeah, of course not.
Yeah, we can say, I mean, it's going to be the biggest, strangest, most different Batgirl issue that we've done. And it's going to set up an entirely new status quo for Barbara and all of her friends. Everything changes in Batgirl 50. That comes out in March 2016.
We're not going to lose Burnside, are we? Because she's got play landed in there.
Can't tell you.
So you got to buy it in order to find out what's going on. Okay. Well, you guys are doing a wonderful job. Keep it up. Batgirl's terrific. And it's so great to see it be such a success.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the support. Thank you so much.
I'm talking right now with Kari Randolph, one of the creators of We Are Robin, the new book from DC Comics. How are you doing today, Kari?
I am fantastic, man. As you can see, my voice is a little raspy after the fourth day at Comic-Con, but otherwise, I am doing just great.
Well, Rio Robin is a really interesting book with a very different concept. If you had to explain it to somebody, how would you describe the book to them?
I kind of see it as when you think of the Batman family in books, you think of characters on rooftops. The We Are Robin book is more like street level kind of stuff. So it's kind of a... I hate using the word gang because it seems like that's a negative connotation, but it's a group of kids who decide that Gotham is not working the way it needs to, so they need something more. So they get together and they take the Robin name for themselves and run with it. And as a result, that causes a lot of instability with all the other factions happening in Gotham. And what happens in the book is the end result of when these kids band together to make things happen.
Because the original concept said there are like hundreds of kids in this group. Has that been pared down now? Because I know there's been a loss already in the book. How has the group been evolving?
It's a fluid situation. It starts off with a couple kids. And then by the time you get to like issue 4, there actually are a number of Robins out there. It kind of keeps growing and evolving over time.
Wow. So how does one join the group? If one is a member, is a young guy or a young girl in Gotham, how do they do that?
You just have to have a specific set of skills and talents. In general, I don't know, man. It's just like they kind of find each other. You know, they're kids who are looking for something, looking for a mentor, looking for a way of being something more than they are. And eventually, you just come across the right people, and it just happens, man. I don't know.
Well, that's great. Now, as far as there's got to be leaders in it, and it must bubble up through the group. We had that. But before we talked about that, let's talk a little bit about the loss that they recently endured. How did that happen? Did you guys plan that from the start when you had the book going?
I'm pretty sure it was the plan from the start, man. It was the kind of thing where it's like you need loss sometimes to bring people together to become bigger. You know, they were kind of scattershot and all over the place, and I feel like the loss was an important moment in the group's dynamic to make them become serious about what they're doing and really focus and become better.
Yeah, the guy's name was Troy, and he was like a high school athlete or something. So he had like a bright future in front of him, as far as we can tell. And so that was a particularly bad loss for the group. And from what I understand, in issue 4, you guys have them dealing with that loss.
Yeah, the whole issue 4 is just like, what happens next? Where do you go from here? How do you cope with this and use it to become stronger? And I'll be honest with you, man. When I read the script, I was like, holy cow. Like, I wasn't ready for it, you know? So that's why I knew it was powerful, because if I'm affected by it as the person working on it, I know as a result the readers will feel it at the same time. So I was like, I was pretty sad about it, but at the same time, I was like, this is good comics. This is powerful. This is going to resonate with people, because he was a great character. And I know I'm going to be missing drawing him, you know, as a result. So I feel like I'm very proud of this book, because we deal with stuff like that in a respectful way. But I feel like it's important sometimes to show that you can't evolve as people unless you take a loss, you take a step back.
Now, one of the things I really like about the book, too, is that it adds diversity to the Batman universe. Sometimes we don't get quite a lot of that in there. When you guys started planning the book and dealing out, was that a specific intent, like an inner-city youth kind of setup?
Yeah, I think from the jump, it was a thing where we wanted a book that obviously fit in the Bat family, but at the same time had its own powerful voice, and diversity was a big part of it. I think the first thing when I got hired, they were like, where do you live? And I was like, Brooklyn. I was like, they're like, perfect. Because Brooklyn is, it feels like, you know how Gotham's a big city? It's like New York. Well, this book feels like the Brooklyn part of Gotham. Like, it has to have that kind of feel where it's like, Gotham has a specific feel to it, but this is like street level. It has to have an authenticity. And I feel like, you know, with me and Jorge, I feel like we can add a certain level of authenticity because we've been there. I know those streets. I live in Fort Greene, Brooklyn, so I can tell you like what it's like to be in the inner city. I've lived in the inner city my entire life, you know, so it's something that's ingrained in me already. And I feel like I can kind of add that element to it. And so I feel like that's important to kind of show that Robins can be in all shapes, all sizes, all colors, all, you know, ethnicities. It's important to show that to kids because so they can identify with that. You know, like since I've been here, I've seen a number of kids dressing as Duke, and they've come up to me and said, yo, thank you, man, for making this book, because this is important to us. So we can have someone to identify with, cosplay with. It's a big thing to people. So I'm glad it exists. I'm glad I'm a part of it.
Now, as far as like the individual characters themselves, did you guys base them on anybody you knew, or were they like composites or just brand new characters?
I think they're brand new characters. I've been told by people that Duke looks a little too much like me when I draw him, so it's very possible that I'm infusing myself into that a little bit. But they were all, I mean, definitely Lee was the brainchild of all this, you know, so that's definitely a question for him more than me. But as far as drawing them, we were just looking at doing cool costumes and styles, but stuff that was still relatable, stuff you could still find. If you went to the store, you could still buy these costumes. They're not like super high level like Batman gear. They're stuff that's just streetwear. It's still kind of cool. It's still a little, you know, it's, I was looking at a lot of like street blogs, like hip-hop blogs, stuff that's out there right now and that you could actually purchase if you really wanted to, which also makes it easy to cosplay as, you know.
Now, you guys have a big event coming, the Robin War, and you guys are involved with it. How is the We Are Robin cast going to be involved in that?
They're kind of the core of it. Well, I don't want to spoil too much, but generally, it's just like, it's everyone in the Bat family reacting to these Robins and what happens when they kind of throw things into chaos because Gotham's been turned upside down. You know, Batman's not around right now. So there's a big void, and the Robins kind of try to fill that void, and that throws everything out of whack. So there's a lot of, you know, reaction from the Gotham Academy books, from Dick Grayson, from Damian. They're all like, who are these kids? And what is this all about? And you see what happens as a result.
It'll be good. And, of course, as the characters develop, do you guys have plans for them? Are there arcs you have in mind for the different characters?
Without saying too much, there's a lot of stuff in the works right now. I think we're planning this book to be around for a long time. As long as the fans support it, you know, we're here to make this thing happen. And there's definitely some cool stuff happening in the future that I really hope, you know, people give it a shot, because it's something I'm very proud of personally. I feel like we put a lot into the book, and we think it's like a really special thing, you know.
Do you have any other projects that you're working on that we should be aware of?
At the moment, outside of, I probably shouldn't plug stuff outside of DC. So, I mean, I finished up a book called Tech Jacket for Image. Right now, I'm Robin all the time and just trying to make that the best thing I can make right now. So, not much else is happening, just trying to make my deadlines.
Well, I think you're doing a great job, and I think it's a great book, and I encourage people to buy it, so keep it up. Which the next issue is coming out when? Do you know? Is this number 5?
Number 5 is the next one out. I don't know necessarily, because I'm kind of transitioning to the Robin War thing right now, so that's going to be all Jorge, I believe. So, but 5 should be out in the next couple weeks, though. I don't have an exact date.
So there's a separate Robin War book. Is that what's going on?
Basically, I will be drawing the book ends to the Robin War crossover. So, the, you know, We Are Robin will be happening within that, but the beginning book and the end book will be all me.
Well, you're doing a terrific job, so please keep it up. And again, We Are Robin is the book to buy, so thank you very much.
Thank you for your time, man. Appreciate it, man.
I'm talking this afternoon, and it's great to do it with what I call Batman's new dynamic duo, writer extraordinaire Scott Snyder. How you doing, Scott?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Wayne.
Always good to talk with you. And Greg Capullo, how's it going, Greg?
Fantastic, man. Thank you.
One of the things I love about you guys' run is that you guys have challenged us and taken chances with Batman over the years that you've been doing it. And the latest challenge is putting Jim Gordon as Batman, which has really been well received by the fans, which is really good. What did that accomplish for you as far as storytelling goes, Scott?
Well, for me, what it did was it gave me a whole new angle on the entire mythology. You know, when you have a franchise that's 75 years old and has some of the best stories in all of literature, it's hard to do something that gives you sort of a new lens with which to look at the characters and Gotham itself. And for me, this gives me a way of sort of telling a Batman story I knew had never been told before, both for Bruce, where Bruce is cured of Batman, and for Jim Gordon, and for Batman himself as a kind of legendary figure. So when you can do that and kind of turn everything on its head and just get a new way of telling stories, or a new story, you know, for Gotham itself, you know you have to try it, even if the fans are going to rebel and hate you. But luckily with this one, you know, I remember calling Greg and saying this might be the one that we like jump the shark on or jump like 10 sharks or 20 sharks on, but we got to try it because, you know, again, like it just gives me such an interesting prism with which to sort of re-examine Gotham, and luckily the fans have been great about it, so it's been a really fun ride.
Now, Greg, you got to design a new outfit for that. What was it like to do that, and how did you accomplish that?
Well, Scott always gives me kind of like his initial ideas of how he sees it, and sometimes what I come up with is close to that, sometimes a little bit further away, sometimes very far away. But we had to do an armor. Scott had ideas about, but you'd say stuff like, you know Appleseed, and I was like, ah, I know the Appleseed stuff, and it was that kind of an armor. You know, you didn't want it as bulky as some of the previous stuff that we did, which is great because, you know, I wanted to design the armor to emulate Gordon's slender physique. And so I went along that way, and Scott had like a couple ideas that he was pretty adamant about. One was asymmetry. He wanted an asymmetrical ear thing, which I didn't really like the idea of. And he goes, okay, well then at least make them very tall, which we went with the very tall, which became known as the rabbit suit. Okay. But then it was like, you know, just how do I make it kind of like echo Gordon, you know, alongside of the stature of the thing. And so that's why he went with kind of a blue and white, kind of like the cop car color scheme, and I made the striping similar that you see on the side of a cop car, the thick and thin lines. And then Scott wanted the Under Armour design, so something very sleek and pared down, and so with some color on it, you know, some bold color on it. And so the first round was coming up with a new bat emblem for the chest, because we've seen so many of those. And so kind of like my idea was to stretch it a little further onto the delts past the chest, and to actually give some fangs to oppose the standing ears. And then Scott, again with the asymmetrical design, he said, can we give him just like one shoulder patch? And I go, that's just a splash of color. So, okay. I said, I have to have a purpose, though, for that to make me feel like it works with the design. So we go, maybe it is a power pack of some sort, and that channels down into the hands, and say, okay, we'll work with that. And so I go, okay, I'll make that echo the thin and thick lines that we see on the outside. So it's all integrated. And apart from that, the line work is all about how I feel about a bat, you know? And so just kind of take my seams and just go, how do I feel about that? And that's how the design of the Gordon thing came together, yeah.
Well, I really like it. Super cool. They even have like a little poster here you can get that has what the armor does in certain places, all the functions. So I really like that. Now, you guys now have a new villain that you've created called Mr. Bloom. Scott, do you want to describe what that character is about?
Yeah, you know, I feel like Gotham is this great sort of villain for anyone that steps up to be a hero in the city, because it sort of finds the thing you're most afraid of and then generates an enemy sort of out of that DNA, out of that stuff. So because Jim Gordon is someone who's believed in the police and local government and all the kind of things that we count on to protect us in a city like Gotham or New York or, you know, Chicago or Baltimore, I needed a villain who would represent sort of the failure of all of those things and exploit that and be somebody who says, nothing's going to protect you but you. There's no way to sort of solve the more systemic problems or even the everyday problems that oppress you. Come to the end of the alley where I am and get your superpowers, get your weapons, and protect your own. And in that way, you know, I knew I wanted him almost to be like a weed growing through the cracks of the city, you know, literally and figuratively, and someone that was very slinky and very spidery and very dark, but had this kind of emblem of a flower, like something that blooms and grows in the dark, but is kind of also predatory in some ways. And so I sent Greg some ideas, but really I think what he came up with at the end of the day is one of the best designs for a new villain in ages. I just love looking at him. And in the next couple issues, he just sort of explodes onto the scene in a really fun way.
Well, you know, you're talking about the design. I really like the design too. Very slender, very different design. How did that come to you? Obviously, he gave you some ideas, but how did you come up with the final design?
Yeah, and you know, Scott does have some ideas that he gives to me, and I also try and use how he describes things to me. So, you know, when he's talking about Bloom being a weed, well, let's make him weed-like in stature. And he had a very specific idea about the mask, though. And when he came to me and approached me about making a, quote, creepy character, he said, you know, it'd be really creepy, just have a flower on his face. And I just couldn't wrap my mind around a flower being creepy, being I've given my mother flowers, given my girlfriend's flowers, given my wife flowers. If you're in the doghouse, flowers get you out of the doghouse. And so you go, creepy, I don't really get it. He goes, yeah, like a sunflower. And again, I go, as a kid, you know, me and my sister would grow these things and go, how cool, faces the sun, this is fun, this is nice, this is neat, not creepy, you know? And so he kept on about trying to make me see flowers in a creepy way, but at the same time, I was going, okay, it's weed-like, and I started to come up with like a bride's veil of weeds that were just all scraggly and twisted around the face, which looked really kind of creepy, you know, and he sent me a picture of a sugar skull, and I go, as a digital artist, maybe you pull that off, but I can't imagine drawing that thing, especially as I shrink the scale of it and all. I just can't be done really effectively. And so he finally came upon a flower that looked carnivorous, had all these little teeth around in the center, you know, and I said, now that is a creepy flower. Now all of a sudden it worked for me. And so, you know, is the eye in the middle is the Cyclops kind of vibe. And so we went with that. And then last minute thing, the cover was already drawn and Scott was going, I kind of want to hold back the skin color of this character, want to obscure that a little bit. And so the cover was already inked. Danny had handed it in. So I go, I editor had an idea, go, no, that's a terrible idea. And I said, I'll find something, and just I go, I'll give fishnets, because fishnet would stretch, as this character is able to do, and stuff like that. And I whipped that out digitally, superimposed it over Danny's inks, and that's how it came to be.
I love fishnets so much, dude. It's the creepiest, because it looks like a spider web as it goes
yeah,
through.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but that was last-minute stuff, you know, a solution to the problem we had that had to be solved like that.
Right now, you guys have a 50th issue coming up. What can you tell us about that at this point? I haven't officially announced what's going to happen in it, but are there things that's going to be special in the 50th issue?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I know we've put Gotham in like some serious jeopardy before where we've made it look post-apocalyptic and blacked it out, and we've had zombie ninja warriors, talons attack the entire city, but I honestly promise you that this is the craziest finale of anything we've done. It really is. Without giving too much away, there's almost like a giant cataclysmic thing in the center of the city that could threaten to completely erase it forever. So I'm really, really thrilled with it. There are going to be a lot of status quo changes. I don't want to give too much away, but you'll see some of your favorite characters come back and some new ones graduate to new roles and all of that stuff. So we wanted it to be a real milestone, you know, especially I think as a way of celebrating the stuff we've been able to do together as a team on the book and getting to look back a little bit as well. So there'll be a lot of kind of Easter eggs, a lot of stuff in that issue that I think both kind of does some things that are very new and surprising that you don't expect in the arc, and then at the same time we'll also kind of celebrate some of the stuff that we've been able to build on the book over the last 5 years.
That's really great stuff. You guys are just terrific, and I just want to say, Greg, we're going to miss you when you take a break for a little while, but we'll look forward to seeing you come back. So as long as you guys have good stories to tell, we'll be here ready to read them. So thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks always, Wayne. You're great.
And that's it for the 200th episode. Be back next week when I'll have even more interviews from this year's New York Comic Con and another special interview. But until then, keep reading your comics.
It's over, Joker.
Over? Why, my dear delusional Dark Knight, it hasn't even begun.